truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to China Jedication, episode 2. Will in the house.
Hello.
Yeah. And, Will, what have you been up to recently? Anything good?
Bad, ugly? Recovering from having the family around at Christmas time the entire time. Yeah. That was something to recover from.
That was quite a few weeks ago. Right? Then we had Chinese New Year. How did that go for you?
Yeah, that was pretty good. We didn't really do anything. We just relaxed and took advantage of the fact that nobody was in Zhuhai.
Wasn't it amazing? Because we stayed
wonderful.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're walking down the malls. There's no one there.
Yeah. No lines at the checkout.
It's a really quite incredible experience. Yeah. I'm sure all our listeners who are in China will see this. There's a mass exodus of Chinese back to their hometowns. And I think for a lot of foreigners, the tip is, if you're in China, Chinese New Year, stay where you are.
Don't
get out of the country.
Yeah. Long before everyone else tries to.
Yeah, indeed. Well, what have I been up to? I've just come back from Guangzhou, finishing off my final teaching exams.
Ooh, how'd that go?
Biology one was really, really tough. I actually thought I might have flunked it. It was like every single question needed... Got to go over that again.
Okay.
And you know, the biology one is multiple choice. The other ones were, you know, written pieces. But you would think multiple choice, you know, four answers, but they're not. And they're long, yeah?
Right, yeah.
You just want a short answer, just, okay, every single... What you want is like five in a row that you know you definitely got.
Yeah.
But I had none of that. There's 150 questions. And I ran out of time.
Yeah.
And I even... Because the last 10 seconds, I was just... I couldn't even read the question.
Oh, wow.
So I just choose an answer. I mean, you might as well, right? 25%.
Yeah.
And I got to 149 and it cut out. So I even didn't manage to do the 150.
Jeez.
And of course, as it's multiple choice, that one, it tells you the grade afterwards. So
really?
I had my hands on my head and I looked up and I passed.
Oh, wow.
So I was really... Yeah, thank you. So I hear back on the other one in a few weeks because it's written. It has to be marked.
You had me nervous there. I was starting to get a sweat.
I wouldn't be here, I think, if I failed. I'd be crying somewhere and thinking, oh gosh, I shouldn't be teaching biology.
Okay.
So anyway, back into episode 2. And before we begin, of course, getting into the main content, I like to slip in a little bit of a joke.
May the smile be with you.
Thank you.
So, joke of the day, I guess we call it, is this. Teacher-based, of course, Will. A first grade teacher handed out a colouring page to her students. On it was a picture of a frog holding an umbrella. When the class handed them in, one little boy had coloured the frog bright purple. The teacher scolded him, asking, "How often have you seen a purple frog?" And the student replies, "Well, how often have you seen a frog holding an umbrella?" Yes, I'm sure you've... Is that a common joke, do you think, there, Will? Have you heard that one before?
I don't think I've heard it before. I think I've heard something very similar to it. I can't recall it at the moment. No.
But I think it says a lot, you know, kids, you know, don't be fooled.
Right?
Yeah. Frogs with umbrellas. Anyway, it's raining today. I needed an umbrella coming to school today. So, Will, let's get into the main content today. What are we going to talk about?
Today I thought we'd have a chat about, I guess we're still setting the scene for the rest of the talks to come.
Ooh, scene in it, yeah.
Yeah, so, which is basically, let's have a chat about the current state of education, just in general, not necessarily only in China, or only in the West, or the States, or wherever. Just have a chat about how we can sort of try to reimagine education and get it back onto a more, well, put it on a futuristic or future-proof track.
Mm, it's an interesting topic, this. We're going to try and do it in about 10 minutes, aren't we? Because that's the way we roll.
Right.
So, I'm sure everyone listening now could have something to say about the state of education. Mm. What's your perspective? What angle do you come in on that?
I like to take a more take a step back and look at the entire idea of education. Yeah. If we look at it objectively, we could say that the entire purpose of education is to make sure that we prepare young people for the future. In a really basic term, in a really basic way, and really, if you're a teacher and you've been doing this for a while, you kind of start to realize that you're not preparing students for the future. Mm. You're preparing them for either now, which is nearly irrelevant, or the past. Which is good to know, it helps you inform your decisions going forward, but it leaves you woefully unprepared for what's to come, because we have no idea what's in the future.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's a conundrum, but at the same time, I think we can give our students, or give our children even, the tools that they need to be able to find out what the future is going to be, and to be able to exist in whatever future happens to arise.
Well, on that note, for one, we could both agree we don't know what the future's going to be. So it would be a good idea to prepare our students for being able to understand how to work with things that we don't know is going to be.
Right. Yeah.
So that indispensable skill. I just get this feeling when we talk about this subject that I just have a picture in my mind of a red brick university in England or something that's got cobwebs in the corners of the old rooms, and the floors creak, and there's that nice smell, and there's something in that.
Yes.
But I also think there's something in new places which don't have cobwebs and have the mirror, the windows all around, and you know, the light shining in, the floor's nice and shiny, and you have that kind of Apple Mac white tabletops.
Yeah.
That sparse Zen look. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to find a marriage of those two somehow. I also would say, going back to what you were saying, I think a lot of what education's built on now around the world comes from the Industrial Revolution. And when that happened, I think, you say we were preparing our kids for the future or for now. I think we were preparing our kids to go and work.
Yeah.
As in, for jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of that day, right? Mm. Of the time that we're being educated in. But look at the world, how it's changing job-wise now.
Exactly.
We've got no idea what technology perhaps could take over and what technology could change in terms of new jobs and new ideas, new innovations.
Right.
So, yes, totally agreeing with you on something. There's got to be a change, a revolution.
Mm. I think the term revolution, it gets used a lot, but we need to be careful, because usually revolution means, you know, like completely tearing down and discarding and throwing away and spitting on what came before. And I don't think that's necessary. Mm. I don't really think it's necessary. I think a reimagination is good. But a total revolution would be too much. I think we need to make sure that we keep the parts of the past that work and just future-proof them. Like, discard the things that don't need to be there. Like, you were saying that in the Industrial Revolution, the time of the Industrial Revolution, they sort of decided that the best thing to do would be to have all the students go to all the same classes at all the same times. And that works. That works really well for a developing nation. We see that work very well, because those students go and they are a perfect workforce for building up the infrastructure of a nation. Mm. And they could be the perfect workforce, or the perfect students prepared to go and be an army to make sure that nation's borders are secure. But, like, how many countries now and in the future are going to need to do that? Now, you could argue that, you know, places that are underdeveloped need that sort of thing, but quite honestly, the population of the Earth and the amount of people in nations like, unfortunately, like China, or, say, India, where education is just such a massive, massive industry, they're still creating these cookie-cutter kids. Mm. And it's a bit unfortunate because, I mean, you and I both live here. We both know how creative these kids are. And for me, it just broke my heart seeing these creative kids get smushed into a mold.
Yeah.
And the ones that didn't fit are kind of like ignored or, you know, not beaten, but, you know, pretty much pushed until they are fitting the mold. And it's scary.
That is a revolution, isn't it? Beating. I want to change the word revolution and keep it at the same time. I want to change it into, it's just occurred to me, re-evolution.
Ooh, very nice.
Can we go with that?
Yeah, okay.
Re-evolution. Now, I tell you what, Will, something coming off of this is, in my opinion, schools should be there to, and this might seem a little bit, I don't know, spiritual, mumbo-jumbo, hippie-hippie, whatever. I think when a kid enters school, the agreement should be between the parents, who are the original teachers, in my opinion, and the school, is over the years they go through school, there should be one objective only. And that is to find that child's, what I would call, stardust.
Oh.
Their mojo.
You did get it, didn't you?
Because all of them, every one of us has something. And for most of us, like me, I didn't know what I was doing when I went to uni and did genetics and management. Going down the line now, I wish when I did, I'd love to write screenplays and use my creativity to do that. I haven't got time to go back into that. Maybe now, not with family and needing to even creativity, you know, being in the band that I'm in, I'd love to have gone and done musical, you know, digital music editing, things like that. So my point is, my schooling, and I appreciated it to give me the skills I have, I wish it was a little bit more into finding what I was really, really good at. Because if you find your mojo, something you're innately special in, then life, in a way, will become more of a breeze. Jobs will be attracted to you. You'd make money. You'd go through this, slave economic system quite well, actually. And I think that's, in my opinion, sounds simple, because it's not simple. You'd almost need a very much a coaching mentality.
Yes.
I would say a child has a coach from when they enter school, that they see as a coach, not in a teaching sense, but a coach, to listen to the child, to, you know, the thoughts, feelings, and emotions. We're going off track. Can we get back in here?
Yeah, well, I totally agree more, and I might make a joke and hassle you about stardust, but I can't agree more. I think that's exactly what is missing. Now, you said the parents are the original teachers. I absolutely agree with that. I think that's definitely something that needs to be more emphasized. And I know that there's a lot of pushback against parents who are overly, not involved, but overly opinionated about what happens in the school. And quite honestly, that can be very annoying. As a teacher and a parent, I've seen both sides of it. But what really you need to do, if you are a parent and you think that you need to change the way your children are being taught, well, that's your responsibility. You, like you said, you are their first teacher. You are the first port of call that that child needs to listen to.
Yeah.
Like, that needs to be something that you're teaching your child, not, you know, forcing every other, because not all the kids are the same as your kid, right?
Yeah.
The things that are good for your kid are not going to be good for every other child that's there. And that's one of the things that we need to work on.
Going on that point, I think probably a lot of teachers that would be listening to this would have known this story very well, when the parents come in and they ask the teacher, oh, you know, where's my student ranked in the list of the students? You know, are they number one? And I think, in a sense, it's a cultural thing. I think that they're very academic focused, the Chinese parents here, and that pod in itself, swings and roundabouts, but something as foreign teachers, I think we need to understand and respect, in a way, actually. But I think, leading on, that does say a lot about the environment of how you're looked at as being good or educated here in China.
Totally, and I think I agree that the parents are really, really focused on education here in China, which is wonderful, but I think what they're focused on is the score, is the ranking in the classroom. And I get that that was very important during the time when they came up in the education system. And then my wife and I have had long discussions about why that was. It's very interesting if you're into it. But really, the focus is on achievement against everyone else, achievement of an impossible sort of standard. And like, you know, there's the joke that Asian parents, unfortunately, are really obsessed with education. And if you didn't get 100%, if you get 99%, they're going to beat you. Well, and I understand that there is that. That's kind of like funny, haha. But at the same time, like, it really is like that. But maybe not just the beating part. They'll be very disappointed in you, though. And they'll come up and they'll be questioning the teachers. Why did my child only get 96? Why didn't you teach them better? And you know, which is kind of a joke to me. Like, what do you mean? What are you talking? It's like the focus is on the wrong part. The focus is on what number they're getting. Now, the reason for that is because the way that they calculate scores here is very different. So that's one reason. The other side of it is that populations here are very high.
I was going to say that is a major problem, isn't it?
And where you are in your school determines where you are in your classroom. Where you are in your classroom determines where you are in the school. Where you are in the school determines where you're going to be on the school that you want to get into.
Yes.
But the thing is like, none of that is necessary. Because once they get out of university...
Yeah, do they just fall into a cookie-cutter job?
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, but not everyone, right?
But not anymore.
Yeah.
There aren't cookie-cutter jobs anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, look, okay, you and I had a discussion about drones earlier. DJI is a company that's here in Shenzhen. Do you think they went to school and learned about making drones? No. There was a creative group of kids that got together and decided, hey, we can do that. We can do that the best that we can. Like, we can be the best out there. And they did it. Now they're like one of the best drone companies in the world. I mean, like, you don't go to university to learn, in China, you don't go to university to learn how to do any of these creative things or create new things. You go there to learn about, apparently, how to get the top mark. Like, the only thing you really learn is how to cram something in your head and then vomit it onto a test paper. You know? There's no study skills here. There's no reflective practice.
Well, what skills are there, basically, in that? Because, you know, if I'm meeting someone at a pub, and I'm sure maybe these kids won't end up at pubs, of course, but just in a general conversation, a normal conversation with another human being, how long are you going to be able to talk about getting 100% in an exam for?
Right.
So what are the skills going into this, apart from rote memorization in a lot of senses? Mm. Is this environment fostering communication? These 21st century skills, collaboration,
no,
creative solving skills,
right,
critical thinking skills.
No.
Surely that's what's needed,
yeah,
in a future that we're going into, really,
yep,
not knowing what's going to be there in the future.
Yeah.
So I think we've got a long way to go, haven't we?
I think we do. But at the same time, I think it's a generational shift that needs to happen. And it needs to happen sooner than later. We can't keep putting it off. Like, these kids, they need to really start. They need to start learning these study skills. And that's like in my own practice here. That's what I do. I show the kids not where they rank, but like how they are doing from week to week, and where they are in the class. But at the same time, I only get them to compete with themselves. Like, here's where you need to get stronger. You need, like, better... You need to know how to make SMART goals. You need to know how to write a journal so that you can reflect on what you've done and if it's been effective or not. There's also this idea of getting into big-name universities is somehow the best thing that your child can do. And there's no guarantee that they're going to actually, number one, be successful in getting into the university. So how does that make them feel? Or even if they do go to the university, what makes you sure they're going to be successful there? Maybe they're super good at math, and that's fine, and they can go and win an award, which is wonderful. Congratulations. But now what?
Mm.
Now what? You have that. Now what? What are you going to do with it? What are you going to make? Because that's where our world is going.
You're
going to
create.
Yeah, what do you create? That's the most important thing. So one of the most amazing things that you can see right now is that how free education has become. With the internet, it's completely democratized this this process.
Khan Academy and all these
Right, exactly. Even universities are putting out free, now this is going to be the death of universities, you know, but they're putting out free courses, right? You can get free courses from Yale and places like that online. It's, you know, that's pointless. It's pointless having your child kick their own butt all the way through through school to be able to go to Yale when they could just be the best person that they are, find that stardust, and focus on that 100% and get really good at it. And if they want a qualification from Yale, they could just go online and get one.
Yeah, I remember a conversation with a dad once, a Chinese dad, and I asked him where his university, the son was at university. He said, oh, England. Oh, wonderful. Whereabouts in England? Oh, I don't know. So would you know the name of the university? No, the most expensive one.
Of course.
So
expensive means quality.
Which, you know, I mean, gosh, if I was a business marketing manager in one of the universities, I mean, that would be a...
We wish.
That would be a lovely statement to hear. But yeah, definitely touching on a point. Again, it just shows the whole fakeness of our world sometimes.
Right.
This kind of aesthetic, kind of surface level driven thing that we need to be going towards.
Yeah.
You know, it's what other people think about my degree, where it comes from, not about actually what it's done for you. So good stuff, Will.
Yeah,
I think it's time for word of the week.
Okay.
On the sounds and the words of yesterday.
All right, so the word of the week this week is praxis. That's praxis.
Nice.
I noticed this. It's actually on your desk because why is the word praxis on your desk?
Have you been prying on my desk? Have you?
Only looking for your cat.
Yeah. So praxis. Actually, I'm interested in this. Praxis is from where I come from, it's a brand name for the for the set of teaching exams produced by ETS in America for teachers doing licensing in America. So all the teachers who want to teach in America have to, they have to do a practical teacher's licensing course working in a school.
Okay.
But then to teach content and go into a school, they need to pass their practice exams. Mm-hmm. So I've done three exams. One is the core, which is maths, English, and English writing, English reading, and math. The other one is my content knowledge, which is biology. And the other one is a principles of teaching and learning for the older age groups, okay, so 7 to 12.
Okay.
So that's praxis. Does it actually have a meaning then, does it?
So for me, it's quite interesting. Praxis is the process of imagining or theorizing on something, putting that into action, and then reflecting back on whether or not that action was effective in getting you to that goal that you were looking for. I mean, you can just look this up online. It's fairly well known. But theory, action, reflection, I think, is how they you see it most often defined. So yeah, that's something that I think is really. I know it's missing in schools because they don't have the reflection process. It's broken. Like, you can't just go theory, action, done. Like, you have to think, you have to reflect back on it. And
isn't it theory, action, exam, done?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Forget what you learned, like, it's useless now, type of thing. So that's really scary.
Do you know what? I just thought this word reflection, we've touched on this, it's a big thing now in, you know, when you go and do your teaching stuff. I think it should be a big thing in life, reflecting.
It should be, yes.
Yeah. In fact, I think there should be a course in reflecting. It should be a subject just like art and maths and things like that.
Just to shine 101?
Yes.
No?
How to find your shit points, yeah. how to polish a turd. No. But moving on. Yeah, very good. So praxis, theory, reflection, action, theory, reflection, all in that way. And, yeah.
Round and round and round we go.
Really good stuff. Okay, teacher's tip time.
A recipe for success if you want to compete.
So I think it's my one this week. I'm thinking I've got one that's coming into mind. So based on what we've been talking about, generally placing the state of education and where it really is today in 2018, and talking about, I think you touched on a bit of creativity, and how schools, you know, this exam-led kind of philosophy, I think we're missing out on those creative skills. Well, there is no better tip I can give both you and listeners out there. I've watched it 5 or 6 times. It's a video, it's 20 minutes long, and for any teacher, you've got to watch it. It's by a guy called Sir Ken Robinson, who's, have you heard, he's an author and educator, creativity expert apparently as well. And basically in this video, which he does for TED, you know, Technology, Entertainment, Design, he goes and he talks about the challenges, the way that we're educating our children. And he champions a radical rethink of our school system, a re-evolution, we say, to cultivate this creativity and acknowledge multiple types of intelligences. Mm-hmm. Gardeners ate multiple types of intelligences. because we all learn in different ways, right? So it's 90 minutes long. It's titled, Do Schools Kill Creativity? Sir Ken Robinson. So just type it in. You can watch it on TD or you can watch it on YouTube. Do Schools Kill Creativity? Sir Ken Robinson. And I tell you this, Will, it really does sum up very eloquently what we've been talking about. Probably in a much, much better way. Yeah. But there you go. But
there's a reason why his name is Sir.
Yes. I can call you Sir. There's nothing special about it. It's really funny. So please watch that. Yeah. And we'll be back again soon to talk more about dedication. Oh, we've got something to say?
Yes.
Come on, put it in.
Audience, please don't be silent.
Oh, yes.
Please, please, please tell us what you think. Let us know how we're doing. Come and find us on social media. Mm. You can find me at emptyjacket.blog or pretty much any other platform, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. How about you?
Yeah. ChinaJedi.com. As we always say, Will, if there's anything you want us to discuss, info at ChinaJedi.com.
Yes.
And we're all over the Facebook and all that below me. See you next week.
See you then.
If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.